The UN says that humanity stands on the brink of catastrophic man-made climate change. But is it true?
Not a chance. But we do stand on the brink of catastrophic government policies that threaten to ruin the nation our forefathers built and defended against tyranny.
So what drives the climate scare, Jay?
Besides simple ignorance, the scare is driven by corporate greed and the desire of government to control all aspects of our lives, Tom.
Is this part of something more sinister?
Indeed it is. Whether it's climate change or a pandemic or socialism, it really means sacrificing your rights and accepting the tyranny of the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy. It must be stopped.
This is The Other Side of the Story with Dr. Jay Lair and Tom Harris of the International Climate Science Coalition.
Our guest today is Rich Kozlovich, a Cleveland-based pesticide and fertilizer expert who runs the fabulous blog Paradigms and Demographics, which you can see on the web at paradigmsanddemographics.blogspot.com. I love this site because Rich is prepared to look behind the curtain to see what is really happening in a whole host of issues, including climate change, energy, radical environmentalism, race relations, international affairs, education, and many other topics. In describing the purpose of his blog, Rich says the following: I also believe that to be green is to be irrational, misanthropic, and morally defective. They are the barbarians at the gate we have to stand against. Our greatest worry is those who support and facilitate their misanthropic goals. For the past few years, Rich has taken a special interest in how China is infiltrating the United States and indeed many countries in all sorts of ways in their quest to become the world's leading nation by 2049. That will be the 100th anniversary of their bloody rise to power. China's influence in the U.S. is especially our topic for our show today. So welcome to the show, Rich.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tom, I met Rich, it's more than a decade ago, and we struck up a friendship. And I found that Rich turned out to be one of the most intelligent people that I had ever met. And we started meeting regularly for lunch, mostly for me to pick his brains. He may not have the IQ of Elon Musk, who I honestly think is the smartest person on the planet, but he's definitely in this league. And the wisdom that I've gained from him as a student of the evil empire of China has been tremendous. And so it's been exciting to invite him on the show. And we're going to spend 2 weeks this weekend and next weekend talking about China. And it's probably the most important topic for Americans to understand. They are an evil empire. They want to take over the world piece by piece, and they're doing it piece by piece, one country after another. And certainly they have a target on us particularly. So we're going to look at the good, bad, and the ugly of China. It's not all bad. They've got their problems. People are incredibly pessimistic about how they're trying to eat our lunch, but it isn't all bad. They got problems themselves. But Rich, let's find out, how did you become interested in China as a student to begin with?
I got interested in China from when I was in the service. I worked in intelligence when I was in the service, and I was involved in Vietnam and sitting off the coast of North Vietnam. And I was even involved with going up to try to bring the Pueblo back out of North Korea, which of course didn't happen. But just all of that, you had a kind of a natural tendency to pay attention to a lot of things, even just casually. 20 years ago or so, there was a book came out by a guy by the name of Jared Diamond called Guns, Germs, and Steel. And that was a great book. It was one everybody should have read. And he had some great stuff in there about China. As an example, technologically, they were 500 years ahead of the rest of the world. They lost that impetus because at some point the emperors decided that that was kind of dangerous, because what if they come up with something really, really good and some general decided he wanted to be emperor and they would be out. And what they did was, is they instilled, which we're facing a lot of, is bureaucracy, regulations, what we call licensure now. taxes, and it stifled all of that growth. It got to the point when European traders went into China, they brought clocks with them. For some reason, which I don't understand, that was a big component of their religious thinking at that time. And they were all excited about it. And then, according to him, one of their scholars looked back in their records and discovered the Chinese had allegedly discovered clocks 300 years earlier, but lost it. I thought that was absolutely amazing. And I thought it was something worthwhile to pay attention to, because those are the kind of things that we deal with now with the EPA and a lot of these other agencies that just write their rules as they go along, because these regulations are in effect de facto laws that Congress did not pass. But that's what really got me interested.
You have really made an analogy here. Our nation is now going backwards, just as they had invented the clock 300 years earlier, and things going on bureaucratically in China stifled their advances. There's no question EPA is doing that. The most specific reasons we're going backwards: we want to go from inexpensive, available fossil fuels to wind and solar that can never run the nation. We are an American travelers like no other country with the internal combustion automobile. This cannot continue with electric cars. And basically, the government wants to American travel because they would have to ration electricity to our cars. So this is a terrific analogy. But I want to start off talking about the ugliness of China. I've traveled among perfectly nice people, but I have had many dinners with government bureaucrats and have had experiences essentially where they lie and cheat. But I think one example I'd like you to explain to the audience is what's going on in a neighboring country, East Turkestan, and with the Uyghurs that people hear about, read about, but don't really understand. Give us a synopsis of that.
The Uyghurs are Muslims, and the Chinese government is allegedly concerned about terrorism. Well, okay, there's an argument there, but I don't know that that's what's really going on. What we do know what's going on is they're very religious in their Muslim faith, and they don't like that. And so what's happening is they're trying to force, because what boils down to is all of these socialist, communist dictators subscribe to the idea that there's only one moral authority in the universe, and that's the state. No God, no parents, the state. And so that's the kind of mentality they're pushing again. And Xi is another Mao. He wants to be a bit of a deity. And so they're sterilizing their women because that relieves them of the burden of having children. They're forcing them to drink alcohol, to eat pork. They're turning them into slave laborers. They're actually harvesting organs from these people, not only them, but the point is that that's what's going on there. Now, these are crimes against humanity. I mean, how can anyone not accept that? Although a number of countries have complained, they're really, for the most part, they're not really standing up for it, including Turkey. Turkey was deciding to sign an agreement with China where they would actually return these people back to China that escaped. And you have to wonder what's wrong with their minds. They have all these, they scream about Islamophobia, but here's China perpetuating very real, very serious crimes against humanity, and we're hearing crickets. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And it isn't exclusive just to them. This organ harvesting is going on with Fulan Gong, I believe it is going on with them. They're slaughtering them, and they're incredibly peaceful. You can't use the terrorist mem for them. The fact of the matter is they do not want anyone practicing any religion they do not control.
Mm-hmm. How is the UN human rights people actually reacting to this? Like the different groups that actually form that committee in the UN?
That's a good point. The International Criminal Court has refused to investigate, as has the UN Human Rights Council. The International Criminal Court has said, well, they don't have jurisdiction. Okay, which is true. And that's a valid argument, except they're not consistent. they're more than happy to try to attack Israel and drag them into court for defending themselves against Hamas and these other groups that are attacking Israel. They've even threatened to drag United States citizens who neither Israel nor the United States are signatories to the this, I believe it's called the Rome Agreement. That's not exactly right, but that's what it was based on. And in that agreement, if you're not a signatory, they have no jurisdiction. Well, they make the rules up as they go along. They have said, but in this case, they've said, no, we don't have jurisdiction. We're not going to investigate. And the Human Rights Council has refused to investigate. And they're claiming that what they're doing is not a violation of human rights. And it's interesting. Guess who sits on that Council of Human Rights for the UN? China.
Right. Yeah, now it's interesting because I understand the UN are going to investigate the United States for racism.
Yes.
Do they really have any authority to do that?
No, they have no authority to do any of that, but they've been invited by the Secretary of State to come in and decide whether the United States is a white supremacist racist nation. And, you know, the lack of credibility these people have boggles the mind. The nerve they have boggles the mind. Here's what they're trying to do. They're trying to destroy the American culture, the American identity, the American economy, the Constitution, and they want to create a form of world governance under the United Nations. And that's what all this is about. And I got to tell you, it boggles my mind that these people think that what's going to happen they think they're all going to be okay no matter what happens. That's not the way it works. I don't care whether it was Hitler taking over Germany, Mao taking over China, Castro taking over Cuba. Once these people get into power, there are no rules anymore, and everybody is going to suffer. They'll have equity, all right. Everybody will be miserable.
What about our government seems to be loving China, playing into their hands? Is it just because the oligarchs in this country, the billionaires, are making money off China? Is it because Hunter Biden is selling his paintings for $500,000 to Chinese rich people? What's the motivation that our government is ignoring its own citizens' well-being and doing everything that works into the hands of China? I don't understand what their thinking is.
Well, if you look back over the decades since Nixon opened up China, you find all these big corporations and these organizations that represent them, they're all in favor of doing all this stuff with China because there's big money to be made. And that's what it's all about. This is all about the dollars. One of the things I keep telling everybody, because I found it to be true with pesticides and whatever it might be, these corporations are all about the next quarterly statement. They, as allies, they are, at the best of times, leaky vessels, because it's all about the quarterly statement. And the fact of the matter is when the worst thing that ever happened was Nixon opened up China. China was in deep trouble economically. And I've been reading this book about Khrushchev's Cold War, and that's really insightful. I recommend you both read it. They knew Khrushchev and his whole crowd knew their economic system was going to be a disaster. They would never catch up with the United States. Well, but Mao was a firm believer. He was going to push all of this, and then they had the big Cultural Revolution. They were in big trouble. So he needed Nixon to open up China for his economy. And Henry Kissinger, who I've never been impressed with, went there, and he's sitting with Mao and Chou Enlai, and he says, you know, the nice thing about this is we don't want anything from each other. Mao looked at him and said, if I didn't want something from you, I wouldn't have invited you. And if you didn't want something from me, you shouldn't have come. And what he wanted from Nixon was he wanted Nixon to save his economy by opening up for trade. And that's what's happened. We have, in effect, since Richard Nixon opened up China, we have funded their military and their tyrannical growth all these decades.
I've got to jump in with an amusing comment that people are probably unaware of, and they might enjoy something terrible. They actually wrote an opera about Nixon's visit to China, and it's called Nixon in China. And what they did was they sung the words of the transcript of Nixon's meetings with the officials in China. And they did the opera at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. I actually went to see it, and it was the worst piece of art I have ever seen in my life. If you could find it on TV and watch it, you would be amazed. You could not believe that an opera company at the level of the Metropolitan New York would put on this absolutely revolting show. Just a little comic relief for the audience to learn about.
Exactly.
Well, I'll take your word for it.
Well, you know, a lot of people find China very mysterious. And I mean, can you tell our listening audience a little about their demographics?
Well, China has a massive population, as everyone knows. I think it's 1.4 billion people. And most of that population lives in an area no bigger than the landmass that would be equivalent of east of everything east of the Mississippi River in America. The rest of China is arid, mountainous, has a much, much smaller population, and they are not ethnic Han. 90% of the people in that area I discussed are ethnic Han. They hate the ethnic Han. They resent the government. They consider it illegitimate. And there was and this goes back and forth. The Han have some serious attitudes about the validity of the central government based on all the corruption and crime and all the terrible ways that they're treated. So the other part about going back to the Muslims and these other groups, the Han don't really consider them of any importance. It's always been the case. It goes back for centuries. And so it really allows for a lot of this abusive behavior that's going on within their society. The other part about their demographic is it's an aging society. Their demographic pyramid is all out of whack because of their one-child system. And the other part about that, which is interesting, is they aborted an awful lot of babies, and an awful lot of those babies were girl babies versus boy babies. So they have a girl-boy imbalance. And I don't care what your philosophy is, your religion is, or anything else. That's a biological thing, and that creates problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. China has various problems. And in particular, you were writing that they're building cities that no one occupies, and the banking system has troubles the government hides. And apparently, we don't hear much about this, but they have a huge national debt. Can you say a little about those things, Rich?
I'm going to deal with the national debt one first. Nobody has any idea exactly how much they owe. I don't think the Chinese do. So I'll start with that, and then I'll come back to it. Even though I read a lot where people were claiming that, and I believe it to be true. And one of the reasons is they're spending enormous amounts of money. When they went into what they consider capitalism, we view it as profitability. They don't. Their goal is total employment. Well, profitability is not their goal, and their banking system is part of this problem. They keep loaning money to these businesses to keep them afloat, and they'll never get that money back. So you put all this together, they're spending enormous amounts of money on their military. They're spending enormous amounts of money on their international trade systems. They're loaning enormous amounts of money to a lot of people. And interestingly, back in the 90s, there was, before Xi took over, there was so much corruption, they had people, many in the leadership, fleeing the country with billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. They're not a natural capital generating country. Like Russia was never a natural capital generating country. And the reason why is the government runs and owns everything. America is unique, even compared to the rest of the Western world. And we own property. We have a right to own property, and we have a right to use that property as we see fit. That's what stimulates growth. That's what stimulates capital. China doesn't have that. And you look around at China and the people in China, they seem like you see these shows, they all look good. But the reality is they're living under a lot of rules that we would find unbearable. You'll hear different people say, oh, their economy is doing great. Well, really, then why are they ordering people to stop overeating? And when Mao starved, I think it was 36 million people to death, he did it. But there was enough food. He sold that food in order to create capital so that he could buy arms. And his comment was, this just may be the beginning. It might be even, it might have to do it some more. So China has always had plenty of food. Are they not having a problem with it now? I have to believe that they're not having doing as well as they were, because all of a sudden they're now investigating people who are overeating. I mean, can you imagine that kind of intrusion into people's lives?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing. Our prime minister here in Canada, Justin Trudeau, he said that he admires China because the government gets things done efficiently. Yeah. I mean, do they really?
Well, that's, you know, that's interesting. Most of the people listening aren't old enough to remember, but people liked Mussolini because he kept the railroad running on time. And it's a similar thing. Two things related to what you've just said, Rich. One, clearly, they're going to have a problem with inflation. They're printing money. They're not making money. They're doing everything they can to reduce their cost. But they are two countries, and I've traveled in China, and I've seen it, and I've read numerous books. And it is two countries, and at the very least, only half the country is prospering in any way by our standards. They're being repressed for sure, but at least they're eating well and dressing well and have a place to live. But at least half the country lives in agrarian poverty, scratching out food from a few hectares or acres. So the picture of China as a whole isn't anywhere near as lovely as our leftist friends try to paint it.
There's no question about that. There's a phrase that I use a lot. It's called Maskarovka. It was a Russian system of military masquerade, but you can extrapolate that into a lot of things. Maskarovka, diplomacy, military, so on. Making yourself bigger, badder, tougher, smarter, richer than everybody else when you're not really. And that's the image that they try to present to the world. First of all, I will say this, is a lot of the stuff that you'll see them pulling, where they're making demands on Biden with regard to all these people that are coming there, masquerading as workers and wanting to have jobs and students, when in reality, they're members of the Chinese military, demanding that he do, interfering with that. They would have never done that with Trump. There was a sports writer here in Cleveland many years ago, Hal Leibowitz, and he was talking about the Browns, and he used this phrase because he says, there's every once in a while, there's a window of opportunity. And when that window opens, if you don't go through it, it'll close and it may never open again. And I feel that's how they view the Biden administration right now. And that's why they've stepped up all of their activity, because they believe they have a window of opportunity before Biden is gone or Trump comes back or whatever it might be. And they're going to push it as hard as they can, as fast as they can, because time is not on their side. The reality is they have a lot of internal problems. They have a military that's gigantic, eating up a lot of costs. They're spending a lot of money. At some point, all of this has to come home to roost. And if they don't take over the economy throughout Southeast Asia and work their way into Europe and impose rules that are beneficial to them, their window of opportunity is going to close. Time is not on their side. And the reality is their attempt to establish an economic hegemony through military intimidation is going to backfire, because people are recognizing what's going on and they're acting accordingly. One of the questions you were going to ask about, they're nuking Japan, threatening to nuke Japan. Well, that everybody laughed at him because that's not going to happen. But the fact of the matter is that kind of rhetoric upsets people. Japan is now trying to find ways around and is doing it. Rise their Article 9 of their constitution with their defense force, their support of Taiwan, because they're actually saying their self-defense is tied in with Taiwan's self-defense. They have agreements with India, the Philippines. This is creating a group throughout Southeast Asia that is going to resist a lot of what China is doing, because China is trying to claim pretty much the South China Sea belongs to them through various means, in spite of the fact that international agreements say, no, it doesn't belong to you.
Well, Rich, I want to jump in as we're coming near the end of our first part of the show. I want to alert our listeners to the fact that two subjects I want to jump into quickly. One is to explain your, I think, very sound theory that Taiwan should not worry about an invasion from China, and they keep rattling sabers in wanting to take back that piece of land for China. And the other one is that Tom and I talk about all the time is the climate change fraud. China is playing a major role in promoting America's climate change fraud. And I think those are two great topics we'll lead off with in the second section of our show today.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Rich, I want to go back to why you are so confident that we need not worry about China invading Taiwan, which they claim is part of China. In the Olympics this week, they call Taiwan Chinese Taipei. That was an agreement the Olympic Committee came to keep China in the Olympics. I don't particularly care for it, but we'll get to that in a moment. But our audience has always interested. We do so much with the climate change fraud and things related to it. I want to just explain that China has played a major role in promoting the climate change fraud. And a few people blew the whistle on American universities taking money from China to do research to prove that man is destroying the planet through carbon dioxide emissions. We have a law that was being ignored that says if a university takes a grant of $250,000, it must be reported to the federal government. And it wasn't being done. And we, all of a sudden, when the whistle was blown and the universities came forward, we found out that $6.5 billion was being contributed to environmental research, primarily to show that man was warming the planet, and it was all negative, most of it. Not all came from China. Some other enemy states such as Iran, but we have really learned that most environmental zealous groups that are promoting the climate change fraud have taken money in some form or other from China, because China benefits tremendously by our country being worried about climate change and pushing us into wind and solar power and eliminating fossil fuel, which dramatically would enhance the advantage that China has. China talks wind and solar, but they build a new coal-fired power plant, at least one a week, probably more than that. So by funding our anti-American groups in this country, which are the majority of the environmental groups, it enhances their advantage. You want to make a comment about that?
Well, I think you've pretty much outlined it. Is the fact of the matter is China has very little oil, maybe none, which we can come back to at some point in their disputes with Japan because of those islands that are barren islands. They all decided they own them now, but the reason they want to is because they have oil there. They have tons of coal. Bringing oil to China from the rest of the world is problematic for them because it has to travel through the Malay Straits, and that could be stopped very easily. So if they can get the United States to abandon our oil production, which Biden is working really hard to do, because a few months ago we were oil independent, and now apparently we're importing 20% of our oil. If they can get the United States to abandon the concept of inexpensive, plenty of energy, then it destroys the economy, because if any agreement they make, they're not going to adhere to. They're funding all these people that are working diligently to overcome the economic advantage America has over China. The fact of the matter is, we can, if we want to, we can fuel ourselves, we can feed ourselves, we can arm ourselves, we can defend ourselves, we can create our own internal market. We don't need them. They need us.
You have added brilliantly and succinctly to my comments, and I'm so glad that our audience gets to hear that and understand what's behind what they do. The level of evilness in China that our administration is moving and allowing is just amazing. But you had said earlier something that's a little bit optimistic. And for me, it's very optimistic. I really only give this administration 14 months to run roughshod over the country and the Constitution, because I'm confident that the rank and file of this country will wake up on Election Day in November 2022. We don't have to wait for 2024. In 2022, I am supremely confident we take over the House of Representatives with a wide majority, and it's in the House that all economic, financial things that this administration tries to do will be stymied. I think we'll take a small majority in the Senate, and the evil of our own administration will be stymied. So I am long-term confident, and also all of the things, the problems that China faces, which we'll talk more about that you've already brought up, lead to my optimism. So I want to go back then to have you tell people here, they worry about a war that China could create that would be very bad, and it would start by attacking Taiwan, an island country that they think is still a part of China. And it does bother me that they've cowed the Olympic Committee into calling it Chinese Taipei when it's really an independent country, Taiwan. Speak to why you're very confident that there will not be a war there at all.
If you're going to have a war, there's some fundamental things you got to do, you got to have. Is first of all, they're now supposedly practicing all these landings. This is all Maskarovka. This is all make believe. It's all intimidation. It's all part of their plan to intimidate everybody into doing what they want. The fact of the matter is, a landing force is going to be repelled. I don't care how many people they send. And they've never fought a war since Korea, and they were brutalized there, and they've never fought a war where they had to land people. Now, somebody attacking China is in for trouble, but China attacking somebody else is, they don't have the structure for that kind of a thing. Practicing on the beaches is not like the United States Marines, which are experts at amphibious landing, because the Marines have been doing it since World War II. So there's a big difference there. If they land troops there, are somebody under the impression that Taiwanese are just going to say, hey, welcome aboard, nice to have you? No, they're going to launch rockets. They're going to blow those people up. The losses are going to be absolutely massive. The ships that are bringing them in are going to be sunk. Their air force, even if they're outnumbered, are going to do huge amounts of damage. Their equipment, their manpower is going to be devastated. And the truth of the matter is, all the other powers in Southeast Asia, and including the United States, is going to have to react to it. Now, the United States, there's so much talk about how all this woke military has destroyed the American military, but the man's only been in office for 6 months. You know, all of a sudden they're destroyed in 6 months. There's a lot of people in the upper leadership that are part of the problem, but there's a lot of people in the United States military that understand how to conduct military operations. The United States has been at war with somebody forever. We're just walking away from a 20-year war with Afghanistan. As a result, somebody noticed how to fight wars. If that were to be done, they would respond, and the first of all, with an American air power, which would be the United States Navy. They're the finest aviators in the world. That's why they're called top guns. Did they get stupid all of a sudden in the first 6 months? No, that's not going to happen. The other thing is, if China invades and they're repelled and they get butchered, that will destroy their credibility as a military power throughout Southeast Asia. That would totally undermine their whole plan of a economic hegemony based on military threats. All of a sudden, nobody's going to be afraid. And if they did that, they have to know that it would trigger economic retaliation that they can't afford. Here's what it boils down to. Even if they did it, even if they won, the negatives will be so great, it would way outweigh any of the positives. And the Chinese aren't stupid. They understand that. This Xi is a demigod, so to speak, but he's not a stupid demigod. I mean, he plays the game. He plays it hard. They play it much, much better than the Soviets did. But the fact of the matter is, they have to understand the reality of these things. And it's not going to happen.
So on the July 1st, the Chinese dictator, General Secretary Xi Jinping, asserted PRC sovereignty over Taiwan is, quote, an unshakable commitment of the Communist Party of China. The party will work to advance a peaceful resolution to the Chinese question, but China, and here's the quote, must take resolute action to utterly defeat any attempt towards Taiwan independence. So that is just saber rattling. It's not real.
The fact of the matter is, the only way they could take over Taiwan in a peaceful manner is if everybody on Taiwan dropped dead. I mean, it's all big talk. It's all big show. The fact is the Taiwanese, they're outgunned, they're outmanned, but they're not helpless.
How well is Taiwan armed?
They've spent a lot of money on, and in fact, they've just now made arrangements to build their own submarine. China has prevented the world from selling them from submarines. They're now manufacturing their own submarine. That's a kind of a big deal. There's not much distance between mainland China and Taiwan. A submarine sitting there blowing up one of those aircraft carriers would not look good for China. They have an excellent air force. They have rockets. They've been supplied by the United States with the top line military equipment. They would be outgunned, there's no question, but somehow China has got to bring all those guns to Taiwan. There's a big chunk of water in between, and that's not easy. And whatever forces they have would, I believe, be adequate in repelling much of whatever China would send to them. But once you added all the other powers involved in all of that, it just isn't going to happen. But Taiwan is not an unarmed weakling that somebody's just going to walk in and take them over.
And you think they have the strength of character to actually stand up to China?
I think they're afraid to do anything except stand up to them. What they did was, is they said, the communists says, oh, you know, Chinese shouldn't be killing Chinese. And after we win the war, we'll accept your control. Well, as soon as that war was over, they reneged on that and they ended up destroying the nationalist government, which truthfully, Chiang Kai-shek brought a lot of that on themselves too, I might add. So,
well, I want to go back to Tom's comment about Trudeau and the fact that Canada has stated that they admire China. It's absolutely crazy. Of course, you know, Canada's really has gone out of the reservation in everything they're doing with regard to climate change. And Trudeau has become the ultimate socialist in his efforts now to bring the country to net zero carbon dioxide emissions is going to destroy the economy. But how can Trudeau convince Canada that China is a good country? And Rich, what can Canada do to turn that idea around?
Justin Trudeau is the son of the former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. And Pierre Trudeau was a great admirer of Castro. In fact, you know, he's legendary as to his support for Castro. And so Justin Trudeau has inherited that naivety about communism. A lot of Canadian media are starting to recognize that Trudeau is really kind of an adolescent when it comes to understanding international affairs. So I think actually a lot of Canadians completely disrespect Trudeau for that comment. So Rich, how would we convince Canadians that Trudeau is wrong and China is not this efficient government?
You know, I got to tell you, I find that whole thing mind-boggling because Canadians and Americans have so much in common. We presumably believe so many of the same things. And I don't understand how Canadians have managed to kick back and forth between these ultra-leftists and kick the conservatives out. And I have to tell you, Tom, you're a Canadian, so I'm sure you have much better insights on this than I, but I find the whole thing mind-boggling. I can't believe what they've done with the economy, what they've done with guns, what they've done with defense, what they've done with global warming. All these things that they're doing isn't being done in the blind. There's plenty of information. The Canada Free Press is an example. They really beat up on all of these people. Are the Canadians not reading all of this? I'm not quite sure. I don't have any idea, and I don't know that anybody does.
Yeah, there's two factors involved. First of all, we don't have an equivalent to your Republican Party. Our Conservative Party of Canada is actually more equivalent to your Democrat Party, and our Liberals are, of course, even farther left. And that's one problem. The other problem is that our media, you know, in Canada, we have the equivalent of National Public Radio. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation gets over $1 billion a year, most of it from the Canadian taxpayer. And interestingly, CBC was created to actually give balanced, unbiased news. In fact, the Ombudsman says that they're supposed to leave their biases at the door, but they don't. And they're extremely left-wing. And that is, as I say, one of our leading media outlets. And you find that across the media in Canada, with a few exceptions like Canada Free Press, which is a very small outlet, but nevertheless gets about 300,000 viewers a month, which is pretty good actually for a small site. But aside from them and a little bit the National Post, you know, there really is not anything to compare with Fox News except for Rebel News. And Rebel News is doing pretty well. They have a million regular viewers. But regardless, that's the reason is our media are extremely left-wing. And of course, we don't really have a Republican Party to stand up for conservative values.
Well, one of the things that I've said about Trudeau was he's even worse than his father was, and his father was a disaster.
Yeah. Well, I would like you, Rich, to give a brief summary of how the Chinese Communist Party rules China. I'm pretty much of a student as well. I think you know more, but in a short synopsis, how are they controlling, it's really well over a billion people, but they're controlling, you know, half of them by basically starving them in the interior of the country. How are they controlling the half of the country, which our people would say, you know, live an okay life?
Well, first of all, they do not tolerate anyone who disagrees with the government. So here's what most people want in life, three hots and a cot. Machiavelli wrote in his book, The Prince, and this is a kind of a shortened version, is there's only two groups of people in the world, the privileged and the masses. And the privileged, all they want is to maintain their privileges, and the masses want three hots and a cot. They just want security. Well, they're providing enough security to keep them satisfied. And that was one of the things that was with Khrushchev and the Russians. They wanted to make sure people had just enough to keep them from getting all wound up, where they felt they had nothing to lose. And that's what they're doing, is they keep them just satisfied. And because most people just want to live their lives, and they know they keep them satisfied and they keep them afraid. And as long as they don't get carried away and people feel they have nothing to lose, because once a population feels it has anything to lose, has nothing to lose, it'll act accordingly. And so they're keeping them just satisfied enough to keep them in line, and they keep them terrified enough to make sure they stay in line.
Now that is a perfect synopsis. That's absolutely awesome. What are the major threats that China poses to us right now?
Well, they have, I view it as a three-part mission, okay? They have an economic mission, and with that, they infiltrate, they influence, they control funding, they buy up companies in America, they buy into companies in America, they steal the technology, they take the profits, and because they're not a capital-generating, natural capital-generating company. They got to steal it from somebody. So, and their goal of creating an economic hegemony over Southeast Asia. Their second component is a military mission. There's three components, an economic, a military, and a technological mission is the way I see it. And the military is to enhance the economic mission through intimidation. And finally, the technological mission is they hack our systems, they disrupt the stability of our communication, and that kind of thing grows and destabilizes a society. And if they can do that, it's much more easy to control the narrative and control what's going on. Now, there's been a lot of talk about all this hacking, and they've been doing it. But hacking has gone on for a long time, and what they fully understand, hacking is much easier as an offense than defending against it. And you're going to see a lot of work in that area. And then ultimately, what you're going to see is, this is like how the Brits used to play the great game in their heyday. This is all part of the great game, spying, hacking, whatever it might be. And what happens is it's going to backfire on them because they're going to be hacked. And truthfully, they may be great at hacking, but how good are they at defending against hacking? Once this kind of thing starts, it doesn't stop, it grows. Mm-hmm. This has gone on for centuries, and this will continue. It's not going to stop today. It's not a matter of stopping it so much as recognizing it and acting accordingly. Whether it was old-time spying or modern-day hacking, it's all part of the great game. And what happens is once it starts, it just grows, and a lot of times the people that started it are sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we be hacking them back, or are we already doing that?
Well, they probably are, and yes, they should.
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to really respond much to this name and shame that, you know, the various Five Eyes countries are doing. I mean, do they really take that very seriously?
Well, China's leadership is very thin-skinned. That's all part of the component. That's part of the great game. Everybody's got to play their role, and you take advantage of whatever there is. The key is, do you have people in charge who are willing to do it?
One of the good things on the hacking that did come out of the hacking of the Colonial Pipeline along the East Coast that stood gas stations at a standstill for a number of days, and they found out it was a Russian group of hacking. About the only thing I could say that Mr. Biden's done well in the last 8 months, that as soon as that happened, he did organize a unit of the government that would be defensive hacking and do study how difficult or easy it is to hack what the government is doing right now. And we found out that our computer system in the US government is so backward and so not on the cutting edge, it's astounding. And so we put together the beginning of an agency, I think, that will shore up our defenses, and then I think definitely take the offense as well. So I'm excited about that. I can actually name something Goody did, which is interesting. A few weeks ago, Tom and I had a show on the COVID virus, and we had Dr. Jane Orient on, and we asked her, Dr. Orient, can you think of anything good that the Biden administration has done with regard to the COVID virus since taking office? And with very little hesitation, Dr. Orient said, nothing at all. So I just named something that Mr. Biden did that was somewhat positive.
I'm hoping we can go back to the Chinese dictator Xi Jinping's statement on July 1st. He said, China's success hinges on the party. And here's the quote I'd ask you to comment on, Rich. He described the CPP's leadership as, quote, the crooks upon which the interests and well-being of all Chinese people depend. But would the Chinese people themselves agree with that?
You know what? That's the kind of thing that every dictator spouts. I don't care who they are. They want everyone to believe that the only thing that's keeping people fed in bed is them. This is nothing more than propaganda. It's this cult of personality. Mm-hmm. He now doesn't have to leave. He's been a president for life. He's falling to the cult of personality. He's selling the cult of personality. Are there people that believe that? Yeah, sure. There's bound to be somebody, because you look in the United States where we have all this freedom and you have all these people that believe in all this nonsense. So are there people in China that believe that? Yeah. But the reality is the Chinese are not as isolated as everyone believes. They found ways of getting around all this blockage for the internet, and they're finding out what's going on. It isn't like North Korea. North Korea doesn't have anything. Those people are so poor, they don't have anything. As the people of China become have better economy and they have more things, they want more things. And they're not necessarily, are they really buying into that he's all of this and the Communist Party is all of that? Is as long as it's convenient, they'll buy into it. When it stops being convenient, they won't buy into it anymore.
Does he have a term limit, or can he stay in forever? Or, I mean, as long as he's alive.
As far as I can tell, he's in forever. They've passed rules, and he was supposedly going to have a constitutional change, making him president for life. But actually, he doesn't even have to do that. They've pretty much made him president for life. He's not going to walk away. And all of this, everything that he's, it's just like Putin. Their real goal is to get and hold power forever. And that's exactly what he wants to do. And he'll say and do anything. He'll get up and spout all of this stuff. But he knows that their economy has issues, their society has issues. And I believe he knows time is not on their side.
I want to, as we draw to a close of this show, which has been fantastic, I want to tease the listeners to be interested in tuning in next week. And some of the topics that we're going to take on next week are the aging population and how they're really off balance in terms of their elderly and taking care of them medically, economically. They have a very early retirement age, 60 for men, 50 for women, major health problems they can't take care of. We'll take a look at that. On the other side, we are concerned that they're buying up a lot of America. They own Smithfield Farms, the largest pork producer in America, and they're making inroads in controlling employment in agrarian areas, agricultural areas in the United States. They have purchased the AMC movie theaters. They're employing people. They're building factories here. We want to take a look at that. And also, we'll look at what they're doing in other countries. They have been loaning money to countries all over the world who are unable to pay them back. And when you can't pay them back, they can take control of what they're doing. So we have a lot to cover next week with Rich. China is really the most important topic that Americans should be concerned with. And our goal here is to educate you as to what is true, what is untrue, what we can do, what we should be concerned with, and what we should be less worried about.
Well, that's great. And we'll actually talk a little bit about Hong Kong, if that's okay with you, Rich.
Oh, absolutely. I think I was kind of sorry we missed that this time, because I think Hong Kong is an important lesson in dealing with China.
Yeah, exactly. And I alert people to go to the Paradigms and Demographics webpage. And again, it's paradigmsanddemographics.blogspot.com. So we'll be back with Rich next week. And thanks so much. This is Jay Lear and Tom Harris with our guest, Rich, signing out from the other side of the story.